Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Join Cycling for the Liège-Bastogne-Liège 2024 recaps, both men and women's. I'd encourage you, if you're not a habitual listener to the women's part of the podcast or watcher, stick around for the women's recap, because of the two races, it was definitely the most exciting and there's a lot to talk about there. But as is our habit, we will start with the men's first. 254 kilometers from Liège to Liège. Poggy going off as the shorter than evens favorite, with Van der Poel second favorite. And then Stevie Williams actually rode himself on Wednesday into third favorite. The parkour is 4,000 meters plus of hills that get gradually, or they get harder from 150 k's in to 220 k's in, where there's Côte de la Redoute, 1,700 meters, 9%. It's where Remco Evenepoel has gone solo the last two editions, and he's not here. So Schelmos is our only hope, because he said before the race that he was going to, he hoped to be on the podium. But was there any news before the race, Benji? Anything this morning that I missed?
Not that I'm aware of. Maybe I missed it too, but I don't think so. Just that everybody thought that Pogacar could win this unless Van der Poel does a magical thing, which, let's be honest, we weren't necessarily expecting on our end. But there was a breakaway. It was actually a strong breakaway, a nine-man breakaway. Gilles Helders from Quickstep, who's been pretty strong this preseason. Rémi Rochat from Groupama. Enzo Lance for DSM. I was going to say SDM for some reason. Scaroni from Astana. Pretty sure that's Italian champion. Calmejean. We've got Romeo Dubi Ursulin, so two riders from Total, and Loic Vliegen from Bingol. And behind we see what we expect to see, which is UAE controlling. And fast forward in the race, we get to a relatively decisive moment in today's race, which happens at about 100 to 95 kilometers to go. We're in the run-in towards the Côte d'Ouane, and we've got one of these like bumps in the road. Speed bumps? Is that what you call them?
Yep.
Okay. Massive crash in the peloton. Look to be on the left side of the peloton if we look at it from the front. And there was either a Lotto or an Ineos rider that fell first.
Arkea? One of the reds. One of the red teams.
One of the red teams fell first, and there was a crash that basically was all on the road. So a lot of riders were behind the crash. We have to note that before this moment, Israel and UAE were holding position at the front of the peloton. I wouldn't classify it as they were pacing, but they were holding position at that moment. After the crash, Israel's hard pacing, right?
Yeah, it's one of those, thankfully it was uphill, but yeah, half the peloton, maybe 60% of the peloton is blocked on this narrow road, like including Mathieu van der Poel behind this crash, and many, many other riders like Bagioli. So definitely van der Poel had been on TV just missing a crash of Le Cerf before, and so it's all the directors know, everyone knows van der Poel's behind.
Yeah,
and thankfully, no one actually seemed to be too banged up from the crash. It was just the road was blocked. And yeah, Israel starts sending it. I got no problem with it, Benji. Like, what's the point in fighting and spending energy to stay at the front, and then when the second favorite doesn't do that, and then they're caught behind a crash, they don't get the requisite punishment for it? To me, it's like, well, that's the consequence of what happened.
I pretty much agree with you. It was 50-50, the reactions on social media when it comes to, oh, they shouldn't have ridden, oh, they should have kept riding, whatever. Well, technically they weren't hard pacing yet before the crash happens. They started to pace a lot harder when those riders were behind. Derek G was flying at the front of the peloton. Pidcock was also behind, supposedly due to a mechanical or something. That's a story I heard, whether it was related to the crash or not. He was behind. Vlasov as well, Van Sevenant, Maduas, Gregoire, Simon Yates, Bilbao, and many others. So we've got a group of like 50 behind, probably more than that, but a lot of riders behind, and the front group is like 45, 50 people left, is also a pure guess. But
Luke, by the way, Luke is anti-Israel pacing. He says not on. And I'm in the Mike Tyson. Fuck it. It's so a fight. We're going to fight anyway.
For me, the difference lies in where it happens. When it happens in the hill zone of Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which has started at this point, then I'm fine with it, because you're fighting for a position on those hills to be in that position. And if you're not there, then you're costing yourself the protection against crashes that Israel and UAE had in this situation, like you mentioned already. And when you're having such a crash, for example, with 150 kilometers to go, with no hills inside, we're not in the hill zone yet, we're not at where action is supposed to happen or where anticipation can happen, then I'm like, okay, fair, you can wait there, you know? Like, that would be a bit too much for me. But here, I don't have an issue with it.
The irony is that all the Israel riders got cooked.
And yes. It's like UAE in flesh.
Their best rider finished 15th. So that's the funny part of it. But yeah.
We've got this gap between the two groups, basically. Israel pacing first at the front. Gap grows to a minute. UAE is also starting to pace, starting to help there with already Nova coming to the front every now and then. And I gotta be honest, I'm gonna mention it already, but we're gonna mention Domen Nova quite a bit in this podcast, because he was probably one of the most valuable domestique. Well, he was the most valuable domestique of any team in this race, is how I would classify it. Then some stuff happens, because we are starting to come towards the Côte de Stocker, and before the Côte de Stocker, we already noticed that the Groupama car is in front of the second group. And when I'm saying in front of the second group, I'm like talking, they're on the bumper of the car.
Yeah.
So, sorry, but to me, that's like, this should not be happening in cycling race. This is falsification of the race.
Yeah, it was, the cars were a bit ridiculous. So the gap basically goes to 130, and Benji, it looked like G2 was gone.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like they weren't coming back at all. And especially with UAE and Israel pacing like that. But then it changes, with suddenly there's cars coming into the middle, trying to bridge across. Because once the gap goes over a minute, the cars can go to group one, which is the UAE-Israel-Bernal group. Cars go across. Côte de Stocker, Ethan Hayter puts about 25 seconds into the gap beforehand, and then Pidcock attacks. He goes with Van Sevenot, the airsoft aficionado Tiberi, and
Butrago.
Okay. Pools. Nah, it's Tiberi, pretty sure.
The airsoft aficionado. It just hit me.
And they start going. Maori decides, you know what's a great idea with a minute gap, is I'm going to attack Pidcock and by the Bahrain guys on this climb as if the group one doesn't exist. So that was real smart. And drops the Bahrain guys.
Yeah.
Importantly. Goes with Pidcock. They start relaying. The comma says, barrage them for the most part, which means the cars get taken out between Pidcock and the peloton, his group. So him, and then they drop back Fraile, and they drop back Seri for Van Sevenot. They're battling with no car assistance.
Yeah.
And then group three pretty much comes with just, I think, Pools or Tiberi pacing, with no Alpecin domestiques even pacing anymore. Somehow, group three, and Gregoire got launched across as well at some point into Pidcock's group, don't know how. Group three's on the bumper of the Bahrain car and other cars. It was just ridiculous. Like, it's one thing to be on the back of the car to come back into the convoy, like, straight after a crash. This is, like, 30 kilometers after the initial crash. And people are sitting on the bumpers of cars whilst one's on a barrage. It was just ridiculous.
And to be clear, if there's a caravan of cars behind the peloton and you're coming back from a mechanical or a crash, you can use the cars gradually to come back, because you have to get to the cars anyway. But here the difference is that the distance between the cars was so significant that it's not a caravan. It's just one car there with a group behind him. That's not okay.
Yeah, Bahrain and Vanderpool were not in the caravan. They were 45 seconds behind.
Yeah, and even then, at what point do the cars need to get out? Should they have been there?
The plumber says has to say to the Bahrain car to pull over to Barra and make them do it in the wind themselves. It was ridiculous. But what are you going to do? Disqualify? It's in a line behind the Bahrain car of 20 riders. You're going to DSQ 20 of them? Nah.
Fair.
But they didn't. Anyway, groups all come back together at 60Ks. It looked like it was never going to happen. We get to Col de Rosière, which is the longest climb of the day, 4K, 6% or so. UAE, they alternate pacing on the steeper bits. They do Ulisi and Finn Fisher Black. And then Novak basically returns. To the descents.
Hey. You got to give him more credit than returns.
Novak was the strongest domestique. Yeah, for sure today. He's really, really good. And then we get the lead out. So there's really nothing else. Like, there's no attacks. There's no anticipations. And the reason is, because you think in Tour of Flanders, right? Everyone knows you can't go to the second Quarmont with Poggi and Vanderpool. So everyone with 100Ks to go tries to jump. But here, where are you going to go? You're not going to go anywhere. There's four UAE riders riding full gas.
That's very true. And we're saying four UAE riders, but in reality, we get to Côte de Denier or Col de Denier, whatever it's called. UAE still pacing with Novak, who, when Novak gets to the front, you significantly see the tempo go up and you see people start to struggle more. For example, there's four riders of Decathlon in the wheel on the Col de Denier, and you notice, okay, they're starting to suffer in the wheel. It's more thinning out the peloton. Riders are falling through. And on that climb already, I noticed that Vanderpool was starting to slip backwards a little. And then we get to, they're running towards La Redoute, and I'm thinking, Novak's done his work. This is your moment. This is the moment for the rise of João Almeida. Famous king of positioning. Not at all. Tries to get to the front in a descent towards the La Redoute. Hirschi as well. They both fail to get to the front, basically. They get to the front a little bit, get overtaken by everybody, including Pogacar, who then arrives at La Redoute with no teammates. At that point, with no team, even Novak was nowhere to be seen at that moment.
Hirschi.
P4-5, I think Trek was at the front, Skelmose in second position. Someone doing a lead out for Skelmose.
Schoens. Free Schoens, by the way.
At the foot of La Redoute. And that's where one man resurrects himself. One man comes back from the dead. It is Domen Novak once again, coming from halfway the group, flying past people and starting to set tempo. And it wasn't the longest lead out, right?
No, it wasn't like that long. I mean, the poor guy's already been pulling for 100 kilometers. But before we get into the decisive moment of the race, I'll mention our show partner, Join Cycling. If you haven't already checked out Join, we still have the 30-day free trial, no strings attached offer available for LRCP listeners. And my Fabio Jakobsen plan's going well. What I've noticed the most about Join Cycling's plans compared to the other plans or that I've done before is it's more of a long view. Like if you know anything, a little bit about training, my acute training load or my training stress balance is not going too much into the red. It's all about like frequency, being consistent on the bike and thinking, okay, if I keep doing my programs, doing the training sessions, which aren't that hard, like they're actually not that hard, which is something that's really important, I think, for frequency is that you can't have both. If I keep doing them and I can see my fitness, my chronic training load going up step by step by step by step really, really nicely. My FTP jumped like 30 watts last 4 weeks. Which is handy. So, yeah, I'm really, really happy with how it's going because I just cannot do VO2 intervals every day or 40-20s every day or even really, really hard threshold intervals every day. Just like 5x5 tempo with some zone 2. You know what? If you stack that with some other work that's in the plan, you will get fitter over time. And to me, that also matches what the pros are doing, just with less volume. So I'm really, really happy with how it's going, and we'll see if I keep on track where I'll be in a year.
I bottled my training today. I was riding during the women's race. I was doing my stamina training plan on Join, and I got so excited on La Redoute in the women's race when I think I think Brown and Shabby were pacing on that climb, and I got so excited that I decided to sprint. Like 1200 watts, full on sprint, and I completely died. So I'll have to adapt my plan a little, but it will do it itself, eh?
And yeah, I always have a high heart rate when I'm watching races. I'm on the trainer, like the final races as well, because I'm nervous. So I like to tour the Alps with 100Ks to go. That's the best time to be on the trainer, if it even is covered at that point. But yeah, Liège, on to Redoubt. As we said, lead out from Novak. Skoens has pulled off and one man attacks earlier than Remco Evenepoel did last year. Tadej Pogacar attacks. El Jagua de Tulcan is in his wheel initially, and I'm thinking, holy shit, is Carapaz about to Olympic gold this guy? Olympic year again. He wants, he's going to be back for the Olympics. He's in his wheel. Camera cuts away. Pogacar's on his own. And,
yeah. And that's it. Yeah. As the end of the race.
That is this. We can't be fooled any. It's like, if you've seen it, we've seen Remco go solo twice here. He made Redoubt great again. And then we've seen Pogacar do 80K solo in Strada. So then there is, it's over. Like, there is no, the bigger the groups get behind, the worse the chase gets. It's actually, it'd be better if it was just two guys or three guys, which was the case with Healy and Pidcock or whoever behind Pogacar and Amstel. But with a group of 12 or 15, no chance.
Yep, no chance. And when it comes to that chase, you know, every now and then you see attacks from one rider, from another rider, from Van Hills, we saw a few attacks from, I think Bernal tried at a certain point as well. But reality is that if they keep attacking, they keep neutralizing themselves, and then eventually riders come back. But there was one attack from one rider that I do want to highlight because it's important for the outcome of this race. But Romain Bardet gets away at a certain point, and his attack leads to a gap that is actually relatively sustainable, 15 seconds, 20 seconds on the rest of that group he was with. And I gotta be honest, I was getting flashbacks. I was getting all the Romain Bardet flashbacks, and I can't wait to see this man in the Giro because he actually looked good. Like,
yeah, he was really strong. It was the French boys. He was with Grégoire and Benoit and one other.
Lapera.
No, I don't think he was.
Lapera was in the group.
In the group of four?
No, in the group of 10 before that.
Ah, okay. But I think, yeah, when Bardet created a group of four, maybe it was Van Hills or Healy. It was Healy.
Yeah.
But then Bardet went again at some point. I don't know. Group two kind of just kept attacking each other. I felt bad for Luchenko. He was actually really, really strong today again. He could have got a better result, but he didn't. Eventually, but yeah, Pogacar goes and wins by 140. Bardet slips away. He's not brought back. And there was on the Rochefoucauld and Boncel, which I think is the last kicker, there's attacks from Van Hills. Bernal attacked very strongly multiple times. But the climbers don't get away. And in fact, they get to the valley afterwards, or the flat roads afterwards, and they've not been pulling, not been cooperating, and they get punished for it because Mathieu van der Poel comes back from nowhere, and he actually comes back into the group with Pidcock, and even Pidcock was pulling with him.
I reckon he came back through the descent of La Redoute, came closer, then on La Redoute, on Rochefoucauld, lost a bit of time on the descent of Rochefoucauld, got closer again, and probably same thing with the likes of Pidcock and so forth, because we're looking at those kind of riders to do those kind of moves. And what does, like, first of all, Pogacar winning another monument, Pogacar winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège, like, it's a great performance. We expected him to do it. We expected him to go on a climb, La Redoute most likely, and there was no one that could respond to him. As simple as that, he was stronger than everybody else. And that's kind of it when it comes to that. He does the same length of a slightly longer solo than Remco the last 2 years. And what else can I say? Like, we know this guy is fucking good. How many monuments does he have at this point? He's got three Lombardias. Six, you're right. Three Lombardias, two LBLs, one RVV.
Yeah.
And I'm still of the opinion that he can win all five monuments, even though Roubaix and MSR are never going to be easy. But first of all, Carapaz. I love what he's doing. I love that he's such an attacking rider, but it always comes at the cost of his results.
Yeah, where does he finish?
26th.
Yeah, so he cooked himself. Same with Healy. I think EF rode a strange way. Same with a bit Benoit, you know, like the guys with no sprint,
mm-hmm.
and that they did get a reduced group, like, and also AG2R. Decathlon, also very strange. They had Benoit and Lapierre in the group, both quick, and they didn't pull with Van der Poel. It was clear he was closing, so they didn't really choose. So, yeah, listen, this was not a good race. This is a bad race for entertainment wise. It was like,
yeah, it was.
It wasn't the best race, but that's because Poggi was just too good and
no competition.
Everyone knew. Skelmo, as I said before the race in the interviews, he said he's going to attack on Redoute and we'll see who can follow. And the answer is nobody. And the reason it's so disappointing is kind of like in the 2021 Tour de France, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
You wait all year, Roglic and Pogacar duck each other, and then you're waiting for them to battle, and then Rog crashes out, you know, in the first week.
Yeah.
And then here, you're waiting all spring classics for Van Aert against Van der Poel in Flanders-Roubaix. Doesn't mean he's going to win, but you're waiting for the battle at least.
Yep.
Crashes out. And then Remco crashes out before Liège, and like, yeah, Poggi can only turn up against who's... And the same thing happened here last year, but in reverse. Pogacar crashed out before coverage.
To be clear, the fact that these solos, like, everybody's always saying, oh, you gotta enjoy it. You're witnessing greatness. I don't care. Sorry. Like, a solo where it's obvious who's going to win is boring. And that's not Pogacar's fault. It's not Pogacar's fault that he's so much better than the rest. It's not Van der Poel's fault that he's so much better than the rest. But it's an unfortunate outcome of that difference between the competition for us viewers who want an entertaining and intense race until the fucking finish line. And that's unfortunately not there. And fortunately, that did happen in the women's race, which was a much better race.
I should do the top 10 for completeness.
Yep.
Pogacar wins ahead of Bardet and Van der Poel, so it is nice to see Bardet on the podium of a monument. Van Giel's fourth, Aurelien Paris-Panche fifth, after coming quickly from the Tour of the Alps that finished on Friday, where he won the last stage. Van Sevenot sixth, Madouas seventh, Lutsenko 8th, Bilbao 9th, Pidcock 10th.
Yes. About Pidcock, I do want to say there was some criticism towards Pidcock when it comes to his move. Oh, he should never have tried bridging towards the front. But sorry, but Pidcock cannot predict that the Bahrain car will then bring the group of Van der Poel back. So I have no issue with Pidcock's attack at that moment, Pidcock's attempt to try and bridge, because at that moment, the race looked lost for that group.
It did. I thought that group was gone. And I was like, and also, you can't predict that Maori, for some reason, will attack the Bahrain guys and Pidcock and drop the Bahrain guys, who then go back and pull all the way back the Van der Poel group. So, yeah, at that moment, I mean, Luke Rowe called it, and I agreed at the time. I was like, that group is gone. So, yeah, but it certainly cost him. Certainly had to cost him something. But it was really good to see Bernal in such good shape. That was really encouraging. Disappointments. Schelmose was very disappointed.
Yeah.
Visma Lisebike, of the first four monuments, are not in the top 10 of any of them, Benji.
Yeah, but I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting Visma Lisebike to be here at LBL. Sorry, but I wasn't expecting Aurelien to be here at LBL. Benoit wasn't going to do it for me.
I don't know. It's not been a good classics campaign in the monuments for sure.
But the team also got fucking destroyed, eh? So, like, in RVV,
yeah, but Benji is supposed to be it's the best team in the world.
Yeah, but if 90% of your team crashed in the running towards it, you can't see that. You have to look at the excuse. That's a valid excuse. Now, Jorgensen in RVV, they're racing for the win, and because they don't have a result. Otherwise, Jorgensen can easily, like, top 10 the RVV if he's passive as fuck and does fuck all. Like, we don't want to see that.
Van Dijk did top 10 Roubaix.
Yeah, he did until he got disqualified. Relegated, sorry.
Yeah.
And when it comes to LBL, sorry, but Benoit ain't going to do it. Jorgensen can do that at LBL for me, but he wasn't here, and his form probably ran downwards after the Classics.
Yeah, it's just an interesting statistic that they haven't. And I think you see, like, yeah, UAE in the monuments, much, much stronger across the board. They podium every monument except Roubaix, and where Pollitt was fourth.
Yes.
So yeah, UAE were even better in the classics, and that's a flip. But that was a flip from last year, where.
But it's also a difference. Last year, Wellens crashed out, but this year
Bobby crashed in Liège.
Yes, but also this year we didn't take a look at Bullet. I don't remember him crashing much. Wellens, I don't remember him crashing much this year. Pogacar hasn't crashed. Hirschi been riding pro races where he didn't crash. Like, it matters. Then again, like, complete congratulations to Pollitt, Pogacar for delivering
it.
But there is that difference that we have to highlight.
Yeah. But then I think, okay, but Remco crashed. But then in Liège, Van Zevenon on sixth, you know? But that's also to do with a sprint. Like, it helps to get those top 10 placings if you guys can sprint. And but anyway, that's just something to think about. Okay, on to the women's Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Now, this is a parkour that's actually not that much longer than Women's Flesh, only 4 or 5 Ks longer, 153 Ks long, starting in Bastogne. So you only, we should rename this to Bastogne, just Bastogne-Liège. but the final is, the hill zone on a quick glance is identical to the men's final. So that's from the Côte d'Avannes, Stocku, Rosière, all these are quite steep, Disney, climb 1600 meters 7.5% and Redoute 1500 meters 9%, the Cornemont, Forge and Côte de Rochefoucauld 1200 meters 11% before the descent finish into Liège. So very, very hard race for the women. And before coverage, Benji, we saw Gigante on a Kiesenhofer moment.
Yeah, she went very early. That's the most important attacker early on in the race, because she was basically the early breakaway, Sarah Gigante, and she was about 2 minutes 20 ahead with 110 kilometers to go, going into the hill zone. The gap actually extended towards 310. And at that moment, we already saw some attacks from the peloton, from Sarah Martin and Kim Katso, just before the hill zone started. So they were trying to anticipate the hill zone, but it didn't last very long before the Côte de Haut-Levé, I think that Haut-Levé, whatever it's called, everybody was caught except Gigante, who was then reported to be a minute ahead. But I don't think I can trust the ticker at that moment, because when the footage started, the gap was significantly more than a minute. And there had also been a group forming on that Haut-Levé climb with 73 kilometers to go, an attack in the peloton from Chabi. We get a group that includes riders from every single important team. So this is the previously called anti-SD work strategy. I would classify it today as an anti-SD works and anti-little trek strategy, because Van Acht was in the breakaway for Visma. Chabi was in there because she attacked for Canyon Shram. Michaela Harvey for UAE. Grace Brown from FDJ Suez. Flora Perkins from Phoenix de Koenig. And then, why is this the anti-SD works and anti-little trek strategy? Because those teams would then put a domestique in that group and not pace behind. So they did that. Bredewold for SD works, Brown for little trek. What's your first reaction to the situation, knowing that this group eventually catches Gigante and has a gap of 3 minutes on the peloton?
I was like, this is not a panacoca breakaway, a pancake breakaway. Like, this is like the breakaway in Tour of Flanders men's last year, where all like the second tier favorites anticipate. Chabi, fourth in Roubaix last year. She has a smattering of fourth to eighth results in the biggest races, Healy and Flat. Strong rider. Grace Brown, second in this race twice. And Kadzau is really, really strong, especially in that sort of situation. And the worst thing is that there's just 0% chance Bredewold and Brand can go with those girls. No chance.
Yep.
Like, they will be dropped on Redoute, and if not, on Rochefoucauld by someone like Chabi, who's an elite puncher, and probably Brown too. And so it's a representation fallacy. It's like in Roubaix 2022 when Jackson, who was in the break with Jackson from SD Works?
Femke Markus, who eventually crashed in the Velodrome.
It's a representation fallacy. It's like, actually, you don't want to let, and I don't know why they don't. And it's on Trek too. I think actually Trek's tactics were just as bad as ST Works today, just about.
Yep.
Where Brand is going to get dropped too. Why don't you, okay, there's jumping, but why don't you put Van Dijk or Brand on the front earlier? But instead of playing chicken and letting the gap go to 330, and then you have to pull anyway, get the Van Dijk on the front earlier doing sub threshold so she can pull longer and hold the gap at 1 minute. Don't let it go to 3.5 minutes and then she has to pull full gas on these climbs.
I disagree with you on one thing, and that's a little trek, and as the work strategies today were as bad. I agree that the representation fallacy was as bad for both of them, but we'll see for the rest of the race that as D-Works goes off the pathway a lot more than Little Trek for me, because at least Little Trek is riding for a single leader. Because we get to La Redoute in the front group, Brown starts pacing at the bottom, Shabby takes over at a harder pace, Katso, together with Brown, are the only ones that can follow Shabby, and the rest basically drops, including Lucinda Brand from Trek and Bredewold for SD-Work. Peloton, Realini is hard pacing the climb for Longo Borghini. So at least Little Trek has chosen one leader here, that is Longo Borghini for this race. Gap goes down to 2 minutes at the top, so it's not ideal at the moment yet. But Trek relatively continues pacing from there onwards with Van Dijk being at the front, so at least they're putting it on there. While at that point, gotta be honest, in the peloton, I look at it and I see, okay, there's an attack left or right after La Redoute, remember? And I don't actually remember who was attacking. I think there were some riders from, trying stuff. And at a certain point, an attack happened and Vollering was already responding to it. In Vollering a peloton. Attacked. Did she attack herself?
Yeah.
Vollering that makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she attacked. And this is whilst Bredewold and Brand are ahead. Yeah. And also with like three SD works in the group, Fisher Black, Capecchi, and maybe Blankovash on the back. And by the way, we're seeing quickly from this breakaway of three, they're not going much slower on the climbs than the peloton. They're going about as fast. So the only place you're going to take time back is on the descents. I mean, they're lucky that the breakaway didn't. They could have taken a bigger gap before Redoute, but they started messing around. But the gap does go down to 2 minutes and then back up again. And then suddenly, and then there's still no real. This is the weird phase for me, Benji, where Bredewold Brand are dropped. And it's clear that SD Works have to go for Vollering and Trek have to go for Longo Borghini. And neither of the teams start pacing. The gap goes out again to 2:40.
It's as if we have this typical bluffing situation of both teams are starting to bluff and are like, no, you take over first. No, you start pacing first. No, you start pacing first. And nothing really happens until eventually we see that Little Trek train come to the front and start pacing a little bit with Van Dijk and so forth. And then like, gotta ask your question. What's their goal here? Is their goal maybe to try and get those two riders, Bredewold and Brandt, to get over Rochefoucauld as satellite riders or something? But in doing so, you would have to stop the tempo completely in the peloton and the others would win. You wouldn't benefit from that. Brown, Katso, and Shabby would ride off to the victory with the gap that was at that point in the peloton. So you get Little Trek eventually being the one that chooses to pace. SD Works doesn't really until Bredewold then eventually gets caught, rides for 25 seconds, about 25 seconds. I'm going to spoil that already. Those 25 seconds of Bredewold is the only dumbest quirk I saw from SD Works in this entire race for Vollering. Not a single other rider did anything for her.
Crazy. And like Capecchi's in the group, she's already been gapped on Redoute. There's just no way. There's just no way she's going to go with them on Rochefoucauld. And she does nothing. And Luke pulled up a quote from Capecchi that, you know, she said, I was just a little short on the Rochefoucauld. With fresher legs, I might be able to survive. Anyway, it was a good first participation. It's within my capabilities. It was a positive experience for me, which is me. Not, wow, we really should have probably phased a bit earlier, or I should have done the lead out for Vollering on the climb. It's very clear what the plan was for Capecchi today, which is not the best plan for SD Works to win this race. Capecchi could not win today. And,
I don't believe that either. And we see that playing out. We still have those three riders up front. Let's make that clear. Those three riders hit the bottom, the foot of Rochefoucauld. Shabby hard paces, Brown follows. Katso having the most trouble in those three riders, I would say, but holding on. She's surviving. And in the peloton, it's a little track that hammers it. Launches Elisa Longo Borghini. And we see the response that Volring can't really close it immediately, but gradually close it is. Voss, extremely strong at that moment, able to follow. Niviadoma, as well, able to follow. And we get these riders that basically ride away from the rest for a little bit until Voss cracks. And what do I see from my front camera? Volring's not really riding with Longo Borghini at this moment. I look behind her, and I see in the second group, Fisher Black trying to pace Kopecky to Volring. So they were riding for Kopecky on the Russia Faucon. And I cannot fathom that. Kopecky is not surviving this climb.
Well, there's still the Bonsell climb, it's not even a little. There's like a second part to it. It's like 2Ks 5% afterwards.
She drops from Fisher Black's wheel. From the group that Fisher Black is in, Voss enters that group, having been dropped at the front, and Marcus starts pacing for Voss away from Kopecky. So whatever SDWorks is trying here, it wasn't going to work, and it completely backfires anyway, because now they haven't helped Volring at all, and she has to do it all herself. It looked like her earbud was out. I can't blame her, because who the fuck are you going to talk to? Your team ain't working for you anyway, so you might as well talk to yourself. Like, at that moment, what did you see the chances of Volring in that group still? Because I feel like she still had a chance to win this race.
Yeah, for sure. If the problem is, remember, two riders went solo in this moment last year.
Yep.
Volring and Longo Borghini. And they rode together and Volring won the sprint. The added complication here is, A, there's a group ahead of three riders, strong riders, Grace Brown, Kadzau and Shabby, and they're not caught yet. They're still not caught on Bonsell, and Bonsell's a draft heavier climb.
Yep.
And also, they don't even get caught to flap it after. Problem B, Niviadoma has a teammate ahead, and she's in the wheel of those two riders. And so, both Elisa Longo Borghini and Volling are not in the ideal position where, like last year, they have to chase full gas to catch the remnants of the breakaway, even after the final Bonsell. And they also have another Canyon SRAM in their wheel. So that's why both their teams did not do a good job controlling the brake today, because if they didn't have that, then maybe, I mean, especially Longo Borghini, I think what actually happens is Kasia counters earlier and ELB goes with her and they relay and ELB wins. But not a criticism, but it was clear on Bonsell that the group of three ahead was going to get caught. ELB was pulling super hard. The gap was going 20, 10. You could see them. The finish is a descent, fast pedaling descent, sometimes not even pedaling, and then not much flat, not many corners, no uphill kickers. The best chance of Canyon SRAM to win in that moment was for Kasia to counter on the hardest moment if she could have.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Got uphill to actually anticipate that the group in front was going to get caught. But that's really like maybe hindsight, maybe also she couldn't. Maybe ELB follows her anyway. But that would have been their best chance. Anyway, they get across on the flat. So you have Volring, Longo Borghini, two big favorites. Everyone's looking at her, at them. And then the... What actually happened with the group of three? Were they just relaying or was it Shabby pulling? I think Grace Brown even started to pull a bit more.
Yeah, I think they were basically, I don't know, I was focusing on the second group coming back at that moment, so I didn't really check the relays at the front, but regardless of their cooperation, the second group was coming back, right? Like the third group was out of the picture for me of the race, so it was going to be between those riders, group one, which included those early attackers, and group two, which included those attackers from Russia Faucon. And to me, the most important factor here was when it all came together, right? Because that's where shit hit the fan. That's where...
This was just unbelievable. So before they even get there, about to come back together, ELB has actually done most of the work. And just as they're about to get onto the front three of Kadzau, Brown, and Shabby, Vollering, who hasn't asked Shabby to pull, hasn't asked Nuviodoma to pull it all, so she must know why Nuviodoma is not pulling.
Yeah.
Because she hasn't pulled it all and hasn't tried to back her off up to this moment. Just as ELB gets across to that group, Vollering backs herself off the group and gets into a staring contest with Nuviodoma, who looks at her like, I still have a teammate ahead. And Vollering looks at her and still looks at her. ELB doesn't even know that Vollering's not there. And ELB, when she clocks it and gets to the front of that group, attacks that group, and Vollering's put herself on a 200-meter, 150-meter gap to ELB. It's like, imagine if Pidcock was with Pogacar, bridging across to a breakaway where Tiberi was ahead, and he looked at Santiago Buitrago, and he's like, you know what? Pog can go ahead. I'm going to back Santi off. We'd be like, what are you doing? ELB's the best rider in the race. And this move from Vollering was one of the craziest things. I could not believe. I was like, what is she doing? Like, what is she doing? And I don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer either. And I feel like before we even remotely see them come back together, because that whole phase took a long time before it came back together, we go around the roundabout and Grace Brown basically rides off the roundabout into a bit of a lump of dirt off the road. She's slowed down because of it. Kadzau panics, goes off road as well. And that leaves another gap for people to close. Jesus Christ, man. Like, there's gaps everywhere. And this is where Kadzau was basically closing the gap for Vollering, right? And I swear Kadzau did more work for Vollering today in that moment than SD Works did this entire race.
And it's very strange because Kadzau was kind of playing a bit more conservatively when she was just with the two other breakaway riders. And then yeah. Vollering gets in the group. She's just pulling absolutely full gas. But yeah, Brown, that nose manual was crazy. I thought she would go down for sure in that roundabout. They all get back together again. Canyon SRAM, they know they can't win the sprint against Vollering and ELB. They're raining attacks, but it's not the best place for it. It's downhill. And so ELB does 1, 2, 3, 4 hard pedal strokes. She's into the draft on the descent, and you're not really getting much of an advantage. Eventually, though, and it is the final one usually that does it closer to the finish, Nuviodoma gets a gap. ELB does not respond, and Nuviodoma was going to win this race. She was going to win 100% because ELB had been closing 80% of the moves. Vollering had been playing much more conservatively with these attacks going on.
Every single attack of Canyon before that, Vollering was in the wheel of Longoburghini, who was closing those moves. And I was thinking Longoburghini is losing energy doing this. This might cost her towards the end. And when Nuviodoma had that gap towards the final, I thought, okay, she's got it.
Yeah.
It's happening. Two wins in a row.
Because when she came to the left of ELB, you could see ELB didn't get out of the saddle. And you're like, well, if she's not going to jump and Vollering doesn't jump, it's done.
Yeah, but, and Vollering doesn't jump, but she's all the way back in Narnia. She's in sixth position. And we're talking a gap in between the riders, right? There was a gap in like after like the third rider, second rider in the train, but even before Nuviodoma had the gap. And like, it was, she was too far and she didn't move up either.
And she should have been on ELB's wheel. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. And what happens is Kim Kadzau kind of throws her race here. Not kind of, does throw her race here. And I was actually, because she looked so strong in the final, I was expecting, and listen, she's 22 years old, having a breakout season.
Yeah.
I just moved to EF Education Canada from, she's on Jumbo Visma last year. She's really, the Kiwi, riding extremely well. But she jumps and starts to just slowly pull Kashyyyk Nuviodoma back. ELB gets into her wheel. Vollering needed to be in that wheel. She wasn't. There's the gap. Long straight in Liège. And eventually, Kadzau closed that gap. ELB bridges across. Then uses her as a slingshot. Gets across to Nuviodoma. Nuviodoma keeps pacing. Still a gap. And then Grace Brown gets across to Kadzau. But between, like, Vollering can't win either way. Because I was thinking either, You're now sitting behind two riders in the breakaway from the early breakaway. So there's a good chance in the sprint they're fucked and you're going to be put on a gap. or yep. B, they're going to be super strong, bring you into the sprint, and they'll beat you because you're coming from way too deep.
Yeah.
So she can't win either way, and that's exactly what happens. ELB comes out of Nuvia Doma's wheel. It eventually does take a toll. The work that she had to do in the last 10Ks, ELB, Grace Brown comes from deep with Vollering in the wheel, timing just right, and wins actually pretty comfortably Liège-Bastogne-Liège after being in the breakaway, beating ELB in the sprint. Vollering came fast, but too late in third. Shabby fourth, Nuvia Doma fifth, Kim Kadzal sixth. Voss won the bunch sprint for seventh. With Lebu 8th, Ricardo Bauernfeind 9th, and Fisher Black 10th. Neve Bradbury was also in that group 3. So Canyon had 1, 2, 3, 4 in the top 11 of this race.
Yeah, that's great, but you'd rather win the race, of course. And I don't think I can blame Canyon too much in this race.
Nah.
As in, they had Shabby in front. They played that card very well because she was the strongest rider in the group ahead, and she would be the strongest rider in most groups that form that early, because she's a really strong rider, and she showed that today by being up there and being there in front when those attacks behind happen. Then you've got multiple riders in the group ahead after Rochefoucauld. They rolled their attacks, which is the thing you can do because these two riders don't have the fastest sprint compared to, like, Grace Brown. We know she has a sprint. She's won small group sprints before. Amy Vollering, she's won small group sprints before. Longo Borghini, it depends on the day. I swear I've seen very good sprints, solid sprints from Longo Borghini, but on paper, she's never beating Demi Vollering if they're like next to each other or something. Is how
I don't think she would
it.
Have here either.
I don't think so either. Because Vollering came from far, but came relatively close from the distance that they came from, you know? So I don't know. I do have to say, with Kim Kadzal, yes, she made mistakes in the final. But like you said, she's also very young. She's never been in a situation, a monument in this kind of situation where she has to play it out like that. She might have been in that situation in smaller races. She will be in more situations like this in the future. But coming sixth in this monument is a great result, regardless of the way she played it.
Yeah, she had a fantastic race, especially as it looked like on Redoute, I thought she was going to get dropped forever. And then to be fine and come back on Boncel is really, really impressive. And on Rochefoucauld, she held the line, and
yep.
Congrats to her on the sixth. I think it's all about brake management. Don't by allowing that strong brake to get so deep in the race, Little Trek and SD Works create a problem for themselves down the line. And eventually, if it wasn't Grace Brown winning, it would have been Nuvia Doma winning. You know, it really, they created a really, really difficult final for Vollering and ELB to manage. And that could have been avoided because, like, does Cassia, wouldn't she relay with the three of them?
If they're
group one?
She would, but yeah, she would. She's shown it already before. Showing it this year that she's done pacing in groups that she shouldn't be pacing as long as she did. I think RVV she paced longer than she did, than she had to.
With Voss chasing behind, you're going to pace. It's not even that wrong to do. Like, what are you going to do? Come 12th instead?
You're securing your podium, and let's be honest about it, you know you're not going to win the sprint. You're going to try one attack, probably. Yeah. You can stop pacing with a kilometer and a half to go maybe and save a bit of energy before the sprint, but reality is you're not likely going to win in that situation. This is different because there's two riders in this group though, so off Canyon, and they played that well. Like Longo Borghini also, she didn't make too many mistakes in this race either, in my opinion, as her individually. Like the team brake management, yes, they probably could have done it a little better in my opinion, but looking at herself, her own final, probably she should have let other people close down a Canyon attack every now and then, because she's doing it for Vollering in that moment. That loses a bit of energy. Whether that results in her losing in the end, nobody knows except her. I think Marianne Vos rode a great race as well, coming seven, to be honest. Like, I didn't expect her to be that close.
Yeah, me either. She rode really, really well. I mean, maybe ELB could have, when she felt really good, gotten rid of Shabby. And try to reduce the numerical advantage, but then you got to keep pacing. I don't know. Yeah, it's just... But yeah, a note on Grace Brown, her not the classic season she would have hoped for up to this point. In fact, in Europe, in the races she's done since she came back from the Australian races, she hadn't even come top 20 in any of the early races. And in last year, she was in the top 20 in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 World Tour Classics before she did Liège. So she'd had some bad luck. Also, TDU wasn't in as good a shape, which she won last year, that she won the GC. But she wins the biggest race of her career, really, I think. I mean, TDU's pretty big, but yeah, Liège, Bastogne, Liège. She now wins after coming second in 2022 and 2020. So her and the team will be very, very happy with that. Hopefully she can carry that form into some of the stage races that are coming up shortly, the Vuelta Spanish races and the Giro and the Tour de France, if she's doing, I assume she's doing the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift. So huge win for her. I think she played the final, actually. I was expecting a big attack from her, and she actually backed her sprint.
Fine. I like it.
Which in the end was clearly the right thing, clearly the right thing to do. So yeah, nothing much more to say than congrats to her. But all as well, this was a really, really entertaining race. Lots of tactics to talk about. And what's been so good about the women's classics this season so far is it's like the perfect combination of it's the same 10 riders affecting the race every time.
Yeah.
But it's a different storyline and a different winner or different things every time. You're seeing the same 10 battling each other all the way to the finish, just about. And sometimes a different one comes out on top. It's actually the perfect thing you want.
And in addition to that, I do want to say, let's say Vollering's rumor of joining FDJ is true, then I see Grace Brown as that Roycer type that will be by her side and will also benefit from having Vollering by her side and will also win races as a consequence. So I think that's going to be a two-way relationship, those two in the same team. I look forward to seeing that if that happens. In addition to that, shout out to Solbjørg Minke Andersen, 19-year-old coming 17 in this race from Uno-X Mobility. That's a performance I didn't necessarily see coming, although she had solid performances already this year on Cholet de Cati. She got 8th in Valenciana. She got top 35s in Brabantse Peil-Amstel. So it's not in Narnia that she's finishing those races, but I reckon this is quite a step up again, and I'm looking forward to see what that brings, because that looks like a solid Danish talent.
Yeah, she looks very, very good. There's actually a lot of, like, even Julie Begaud, she got in a Chasse-Patate, but she's a very, very strong and talented rider. The Cofidis, she's 19 as well. And she won Junior World Champs just last year. So I think also she would have been around the top 20 or so if she hadn't been solo for so long. She just never quite got across the breakaway.
False. Sarah Gigante joining the breakaway. Mistake, like, or not?
Like,
is she
being
too good to go in the breakaway?
Like being the breakaway.
Being the breakaway? Instead of, for example, joining an anticipation move.
I think she doesn't want to be in the bunch, from what I could see.
Okay, fair.
In the which kind of is kind of like he's an offer.
Yep.
So maybe it's that. But then you're right, maybe she, okay, we'll then jump with a group of 10. It's like Van Baarle. Van Baarle, you didn't see him all classics. Only time you saw him was when jumped with a group of 10 in Flanders. And then the positioning is not a problem. But yeah, I think I'm very, very excited for the rest of the women's calendar. It was really, really exciting classic season. The men's, yeah, was it the worst spring classic now that the Liège finished we ever covered? Yeah. Would I rewatch any of the races?
I didn't like last year either, to be honest. It was also the same formula.
The Remco Liège was also, yeah, not great. Flesh. Who Amstel Poggi solo, and then Tour of Flanders was good. Poggi against Van der Poel. Roubaix was good ish until the light later. It was marginally better.
It was good last year we can say what you want about Wout van Aert, mechanical on Carfoot Larbre. Would he have competed for the victory or not? Philipsen being there, that was a much better race than Roubaix this year. Because it lasted longer until the tension happened, and it was a moment when something went down.
Yeah. I think it's valid for people to say watching every Sunday when you tune into the biggest race, watching an hour and a half solo or an hour solo is not entertaining. It's valid for you to feel that way.
I feel that way.
Yeah. And it is. There's no easy solution to that. This is actually throughout the history of cycling, this is actually quite common in like the pre-professional era, era. Like, yeah.
Jesus Christ. I cannot imagine watching Eddie Merckx's era.
Yeah, it would have been horrendous. I wouldn't have watched it.
It sounds horrible.
Could you imagine if the NFL was like, or I guess
99-0. Does it have that many points?
Football is like that because they just outspend each other. But yeah, if the NFL literally, like one team just went 16-0 and then won every playoff game by 80 points. This sport sucks. How's this one guy so much better than everybody else? But the what else is on Romandy? We're covering that on the weekly show. No, when's that start?
Romandy's coming. Jeez, it's already starting on Tuesday.
Yeah, I got a hot take for Romandy.
Oh my fucking god, what's gonna happen?
Egan Bernal's gonna win.
Well, it's not that hot of a take.
Oh, UAE team is pretty good.
Bro, it starts with a 2 kilometer TT.
And it has a stage 3 15K TT where Ayuso should smash.
Nah, I'm in Ayuso camp, I'm afraid. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ayuso and Yates will be cooking, I'm afraid. And but yeah, we'll do that as well as the Tour de Suisse parkour came out. We'll recap through the Alps. And we will also recap Giro della Romagna, where UAE have gone with Morgado and Del Toro, and they're just beating the shit out of these Pro Conti teams.
Hey, first pro win for Morgado, so.
Is it?
Yeah.
Man. I mean, he could have been in that Liège team today, probably would have come.
Well, he might have been robbed at La Samar, who knows?
Well, Poggy probably said he didn't want Morgado on the team in case he beat him. So he said with McNulty 2 years ago, no?
Exed out.
I don't know. McNulty still like 4 in Ardesh. McNulty won by 450k solo. Like, nah, he's too good. Can't come in the team. All right, that's all from us. We'll see you at the weekly show tomorrow afternoon. Until then, ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.